Chapter 4. I kept picturing the Colt revolver, even as Sorsha and I started to back away. The smoky woman was only a few steps away when I felt the familiar grip in my hand. Power surged up my arm as I lifted the Colt and aimed at the woman, and I felt it pour through me faster than any healing magic. Then I pulled the hammer back and enjoyed the beautiful sound of the mechanism clicking. She never even saw the weapon in my hands as the Colt roared. The familiar kick reverberated up my arm as the quick trigger responded instantly. The bullet cleared the space between us in less time than it takes to blink, and the woman's chest exploded in a fountain of red. She looked at me in surprise for a moment, and then thick blood began to pour out of her mouth. She fell to the ground with a gurgling sound, and then laid still. Before anyone else could react to the sound of the gun, I aimed at the next closest person, an older man with a beard to his waist. He was in mid-stride with a machete raised over his head. He looked flummoxed by the sound of the gun and the sudden death of the woman, but he still kept coming. So I pulled the trigger and the Colt gave me its kick as it boomed. There was a brief puff of smoke, the sharp tang of the discharge, and then the man fell backward with a hole in his chest and blood spilling around his body.
"Get back into the woods!"
someone shouted as the scavengers started to realize that we had weapons. I found a third target, one of the drummers who had been among the first to attack the leader. He ran his sword through the leader, and Sorsha gasped as the leader looked down at his stomach. The drummer had a joyful look on his face as he took in his handiwork, and he seemed oblivious to the fact that the rest of his companions had scattered into the woods. He finally looked up and opened his mouth, probably to call for his fellow scavengers, but I already had him lined up by then. The Colt responded instantly as I pulled the trigger, and another sharp boom echoed along the trail. I breathed in the scent of sulfur and charcoal and watched as the drummer twisted sideways from the impact, then collapsed onto the trail. He twitched for a few moments, but half his face was soaked in blood, and only a few rough-edged remnants of bone were left on one cheek. The eye socket was empty as well, except for the blood that dripped out onto the road. The drummer wheezed one last time, and then he finally went still. The woods were quiet again, and neither man nor beast could be heard. Sorsha and I both waited for a moment to see if anyone else would try to attack us, then step past the three bodies on the trail. "I'm sorry you had to feel that man die," I said after we'd put some distance between us and the scene of the fight.
"Oh, I hate it. And it's happened more times than I care to remember. But it's always a risk when you do this kind of thing."
"You mean wander through the woods fighting mages and scavengers?" I teased as we finally slowed our pace.
"Something like that,"
she agreed with a smile.
"It's a good thing you were able to call up the revolver."
"I'll be glad to have the rifle back as well," I noted as I tucked the revolver out of sight. "Doesn't it feel like we should be near the old highway by now?"
"And hopefully well away from any scavengers and mages,"
she agreed with a nod. We were half right in any case. The trail soon widened again, and signs of the pre-magic world began to reassert themselves. We passed long-gone businesses, rusting cars, and a few homes. Vines had started to cover many of the structures, but here and there it was clear that someone had worked to keep an area clear.
"Scavengers?"
Sorsha pondered as we walked past a small building surrounded by old cars. There was a well-worn path toward a door and a shiny new chain looped around a pole. Probably, but it doesn't look like anyone's been back yet. There was another short stretch of trees and shrubs, and then the highway was in front of us. This far away from any major city, no one had ever bothered to remove the cars. Long lines of them dotted the road, like some sort of strange sculpture garden. Despite their bulky presence, though, people ambled along the highway on paths worn beside and between the cars. I could see that the road we were on continued on the other side of the highway, at least for a short distance. I tugged Sorsha across the highway to the far side of Morris Avenue, careful to keep to the stones and concrete and off the dirt just in case a few scavengers came looking. There were fewer trees here and more long grasses and prickly weeds. A few yards in, the road came to an abrupt halt at a thick wall topped with barbed wire. A massive iron gate was the only obvious way through, but a large warning sign had been posted on the door that declared the area beyond to be a designated mutant resettlement zone.
So, there really is a mutant wasteland out here.
Sorsha murmured as she stepped back and eyed the wall. Shouldn't there be patrols or guards or something? I asked as I studied the undergrowth. No one had been here in quite some time.
There are spells in the wall. I guess they think that's enough.
I took a closer look at the gate. There was an ordinary keyhole, one I was sure I could pick in a few minutes. I knelt down and prodded the lock just to be sure it was as ordinary as it appeared.
Hex, what are you doing?
Just looking, I assured her as I stood up. Still wishing we could go through here. It would be a lot faster.
Let's get back to the highway. I really would rather not add mutants to the growing list of people who are chasing us.
I nodded and let her lead us the short distance to 78. We were near the edge when we heard the first commotion. Sorsha and I stopped for a moment, then walked more slowly toward the highway. As we got closer, we could hear screams and a high-pitched, rolling laugh. Above all that, we could hear the disconnected symphony of the scavengers. Are they looking for us or just working out their anger by causing some general mayhem? I asked as I started to back away from the road.
A little of both, I would guess,
Sorsha replied. There wasn't much in the way of hiding spots along this side of the highway, so we crouched low in the grass for the last few feet and inched our way forward. The scavengers were back, and some of them were even on horseback. They swept among the travelers and stuck out at anyone who couldn't move fast enough to avoid their weapons. I've got 3 shots left, I murmured as I tried to pick out a target. I slowly eased the revolver out of my waistband, but Sorsha put a hand on my arm and pointed further down the road. A cavalry of deputies approached the chaos, and 2 mages rode with them.
Oh, crap, I muttered.
One of the scavengers had spotted the approaching lawmen as well, and he gathered his own force together with a shout. The 2 sides drew up and eyed each other with only 30 feet between them.
What the hell are you doing here?
One of the scavengers spat. She was the only one I'd seen in clean clothing, a pale blue shirt and a pair of very tight pants. She also wore a feather in her hair and a heavy gold chain around her neck, and carried an axe that was red with blood.
I could ask you the same thing,
an older lawman replied laconically. I wasn't fooled by his casual air, though. His hand was on his weapon, a great broadsword, and his horse was alert and waiting for his signal.
We're looking for a pair of trespassers who left 3 of our own dead,
the woman replied.
And since this is our territory, we have the right.
To go after them, but not the rest of these folks, the lawman pointed out.
The woman sneered, but she didn't disagree.
How were the scavengers killed?
One of the mages asked. This was a balding man who looked uncomfortable on a horse.
Portal mage,
Sorsha whispered in my ear.
What does that matter?
The scavenger woman demanded.
We're searching for someone with a particular weapon, the portal mage replied.
The scavenger considered this response for several seconds, and then her eyes narrowed as she gave the portal mage a smirk.
Will you pay us a reward if we bring you the boy with the gun?
The woman demanded. The 2 mages exchanged a long look, and then the portal mage turned back toward the scavenger.
We will, but only if you give up this tirade you've gone on and find a gunman and his accomplice,
the portal mage decreed. The scavenger woman looked along the length of the road for a moment, but I knew she would agree. The rest of the civilians who could still move were long gone, and the lawmen would make sure that the rest were removed from scavenger territory. Slim pickings if she didn't take the deal.
Let's find the boy!
The scavenger woman shouted at her comrades. With a loud whoop, the scavengers turned toward the east. They were in full terror mode, yet the lawmen let them ride away just so they could hunt for me and Sorsha. I started to point the gun toward the only lawman who had spoken, but Sorsha kept her hand on my arm.
We didn't pass them on the way here, the portal mage declared, so they must still be nearby.
The lawman nodded and looked around the area. He spotted the remains of Morris Avenue and rode up toward the intersection.
Where does this go?
The portal mage asked as he rode up next to the lawman.
Mutant area,
the lawman replied as he studied the ground.
Then they wouldn't be there, the portal mage pointed out. They must have gone back into the woods.
The lawman peered at the ground a moment longer, then urged his horse back toward the rest of the group. He issued instructions to his men, and they quickly split up into search parties. Soon it was just the 1 lawman and the 2 mages.
I was ready to take out all three when the portal mage started to ride west again without saying anything else. The other mage blindly followed, and after a moment so did the lawman. They weren't riding very fast, and they stopped again near another old intersection.
"What were you saying about being free of mages and scavengers?"
I asked quietly as we crept backwards.
"You should have let me shoot those three, and then we could have ridden away."
"The sound of that gun would have brought every scavenger and lawman in the area down on us, and you don't have enough bullets left to deal with that many people,"
Sorsha pointed out.
"So now where do we go?"
I sniped, though I knew she was probably right. Sorsha looked behind us.
"There is one other path,"
she murmured in a shaky voice.
"The mutants?"
I asked in surprise.
"I thought you said you'd rather take your chance with the mages."
"There may be only two now, but there will be more on the way, especially since they know you've been through here. I hate the idea, I really do, but I think we're out of options, unless you think you can handle a scavenger horde and the mages without a gun."
"Oh, damn it,"
I muttered. I risked a peek over the top of the grass. The mages and the lawmen were still there, though just out of range of the colt. I still liked the idea of trying to make a run for it on their horses while I caught the sound of more hooves approaching. Another group of lawmen and mages rode into view, and this group didn't disperse like the other one had.
"I guess we're doing the wasteland," I sighed.
We crawled through the grass until we were well away from the road, and at least had a few scraggly trees we could hide under. Even then, we loped to the door in a crouched position, and neither one of us spoke while I studied the lock once more. I dug through our satchels and found the slender blades I'd found on Benny and June's barge.
"Do you know how to do this?"
Sorsha asked.
Sort of. One of those things we used to play around with when we were stuck around the ranch with nothing to do. And if they haven't added any really crazy spells, I can probably get this open in a few minutes, unless you know a handy spell or two."
"Sorry. Good thing there were all those boring days around the ranch. First poker, now lockpicking."
"Yep," I agreed with a grin. Though the lockpicking was something I practiced with the Reese girls when I was a kid, not when I was a hand. It's how we used to sneak one of the cook's apple pies without anyone knowing. Just let me know if anybody starts to get too close. I worked as quickly and as quietly as I could, but long minutes passed before I felt the tumblers fall into place. I nodded to Sorsha, then tugged on the ring. There was a brief screeching sound, and I immediately let go. The door had barely budged, but the noise would have been heard on the road.
"They're coming,"
Sorsha said as she glanced toward the highway, and I could hear the hooves of the horses as they moved toward us. I tugged the door wider until there was just enough room for us to squeeze through. Sorsha darted in ahead of me, and I followed behind her. Then we both grabbed the ring on the mutant side of the door and pulled the door shut. It closed with a thud, and I stood still for a moment to steady my nerves. "No lock on this side," I pointed out when I could hear something besides my own heartbeat again.
"No need for one. No one on this side is supposed to leave."
We heard the horses on the other side approach the gate, and Sorsha and I sprang away. We bolted down what was left of the avenue, deep into mutant territory. Neither of us had a chance to consider just how dangerous that could be until the road became a little more than a footpath, and the sky was lost beneath the heavy branches of the trees. There were ghost buildings here as well, slowly being eaten by the surrounding forest.
"Are we still on Morris Avenue?"
Sorsha whispered when we slowed to a walk.
"I think so. Can you tell if there are any mutants nearby?"
"There's plenty of life around here, and there are humans around. I can't tell much more than that just yet."
"Well, this isn't a very long stretch,"
I tried to reassure her as I pointed the colt toward the sound of something scurrying through the deadfall.
"How will we get out once we reach the other side?"
"We find another gate,"
I replied, though I had no idea if there were more gates.
Sorsha mused.
We trudged on, and I started to grow more comfortable with the wasteland. Most of the animals and plants were the same, and I could spot many of the same dangers that lingered outside the wall. Still, there was a sense that we were being watched, and not by the usual wildlife. I peered into the shadows and the dark places beneath the trees whenever I felt a pair of eyes on me, but all I ever caught was a hint of movement out of the corners of my eyes. I never heard anything or smelled anything that might give away our stalker's position, which made it even more difficult to figure out what followed us.
"Someone's following us,"
I murmured.
"I feel it too,"
Sorsha replied with a nod.
but I'm not sure what it is.
Maybe we should pick up the pace, I suggested. We started to move more quickly, though it was hard to keep up a dead run with all the tree roots, rocks, and similar hazards on the path. We were forced to stop when we nearly stumbled into a tree that had fallen across the path. It was an old and enormous tree, and our only options were to clamber over it or try to walk around it. Over or around? I asked as I peered into the woods.
Over. I don't think I want to run into whatever is hiding in there.
As we started to climb over the trunk, a howl went up from nearby. It was the long howl of a wolf, and I knew then what had been following us along the path.
Is it just one?
Sorsha asked as she scanned the trees. If it is, it won't be for long, I sighed. We dropped to the ground on the other side and started to run again, but this time we could hear something moving among the leaves. It kept pace with us as another howl filled the air. A second howl responded, and then we could hear more animals start to give chase. As fast as we were, we couldn't stay ahead of the wolves, and as we passed a dilapidated house, one of the canines leapt from the brush and landed on the road in front of us. I fired the gun without even thinking, and hoped the sound would be enough to drive the remaining wolves away. But the wolf was still standing, long after the wisp of smoke and acrid smell had drifted away. There was no blood and no wound that I could see, though it was hard to be sure against the deep black of its coat.
Why didn't you shoot it?
Sorsha asked in a panicked tone as she spotted the rest of the pack starting to emerge from the trees.
I did shoot it, I said in disbelief.
The wolf moved forward slowly, though glided might have been a better description. There was something amorphous about its shape, so that it appeared to float rather than step. As it drew closer, all I could think of was the black fog that Scott had created to try to keep us at the inn. Except that fog didn't have large teeth and a fearsome growl, or a pair of hungry yellow eyes.